Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Once Upon a Time, the unofficial guide. I'm your host, Thomas, and I'm accompanied by my fabulous and always insightful Christina. Hello.
Hello.
All right. So I first of all just want to apologize to anyone out there listening. We're getting this up a bit late, and we're also slightly under the weather, so if you hear us sniffling or wheezing, it's because our allergies are going haywire. So, all right, so last week's episode was entitled The Bear and the Bow. For a moment, I thought that said bell, and I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. But The Bear and the Bow, basically, we saw a couple of storylines. Belle journeys off initially after being kidnapped by Merida, and they take back their kingdom. And we see Rumpel moving one step closer to becoming a hero, which is pretty exciting. And we also finally get to make contact with Merlin. So a lot of progress, but still, what do we have?
A ton of questions.
And by ton, we mean, a well full of questions. Mm-hmm. It's just a bottomless pit of questions.
Never ending.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's start off with what we liked. What were some of the things that you liked that took place?
I like that Rumpel came back for Belle, and then he fought for her against Merida as the bear. Mm-hmm. And protected her for once, because it always feels like she's the one who is pushing Rumpel to be better, and this time he took initiative on his own.
Yeah, she basically just walks away, and almost without hesitation. I liked it. I feel like Belle, even though she obviously has feelings for Rumpel, is in a place where she's not going to constantly excuse his behavior. She mm-hmm. understands where it comes from, but she doesn't have to like it or tolerate. And walking away at such a life or death moment was pretty amazing to see. I'm becoming more of a fan of Belle.
Me too. And I'm liking how they are not just portraying her this season, but I'm liking like the wardrobe and costume changes, and it kind of goes along with her character's progression. Mm-hmm. So far this season, you know, she seems to be becoming more mature and coming more into her own as a person / character. Mm-hmm. And just taking charge of her life on her own.
Yeah, I feel like when they introduced Belle and how they handled her storyline, it was very surfacey. It was a very two-dimensional mm-hmm. Retelling of Beauty and the Beast. And just her relationship in the beginning with Rumpel always seemed rushed and underdeveloped. But now I don't think that. I don't think that's true. I feel like it's natural. I feel like their issues, how the writers write the dialogue, how they portray them. It's a very naturalistic, believable way of portraying these characters together, and it's much more enjoyable to watch. So, do you think we're becoming
Rumbel fans?
Rumbel.
I think so, more and more.
Really?
Yeah.
We're Rumbel fans now?
We're not just outlaw queen shippers any longer.
We've evolved. Now, you mentioned Merida as the bear. Last mm-hmm. week, we were unsure if she would be Mordu or her mom.
Right.
Or is it Mordun? I don't know, but
the evil bear, or if it would be her mother mm-hmm. that we saw as the bear, but, you know, the writers actually scooped us and, mm-hmm. you know, did their own twist in making it Merida, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I liked that. I'm a little curious about Merida and the characters from Brave in relation to the Pixar film,
mm-hmm.
because they aged Merida up and her brothers, and I, part of me assumes that this is taking place after the events in the film, and part of me feels like, well, this could be taking place anytime,
mm-hmm.
and that these, they are just extracting the characters and not so much bringing along the back, their backstory or their film, mm-hmm. you know. And so it, for me, it was unclear as to whether she knew totally about the curse in the scenes where she's trying to save her brothers,
what that potion or spell would do,
right,
to her.
Yeah, it was just like, well, she may know what it does, but what it does, you know.
Because she said it was a transformation spell and changing her fate.
Mm-hmm.
So we weren't sure what they meant by that.
Yeah. Like, in the film, she knows it's about changing her fate, but then that's where the trouble comes in. She doesn't know that it transforms you, your physicality as mm-hmm. well. So I'm curious about that. What are some of the other things that you've noticed? What are some of the questions?
I'd like to know, once we see that Merida takes back her kingdom with Belle, how on earth does she then become swept up in the curse in coming back to Storybrooke with everybody else? Because it seems like her part of the journey with everyone from Once Upon or Storybrooke is now over, and she's going to live happily ever after in her kingdom with right. her mom and her brothers, but then... now we see her in Storybrooke, so how did that happen?
And now she's in Storybrooke, and she's asking about her brothers. So they forget the last couple, 6 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
In
Camelot.
But the way Merida leaves is way before... I mean, it just seems like before the curse took place.
Right.
So, that's why we're...
Because right before Merida kidnaps Belle, they're walking through the woods with Snow and Charming and Hook and Emma.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I assume that they were going to try and find Merlin or something. You know, mm-hmm. they hadn't gotten to the point in showing us yet... how Emma enacted the curse or how that all came about. And
was Arthur with them?
I don't remember seeing him walking in the woods with them.
Unfortunately, we've only watched the episode once. Normally we watch it 20 times and we're totally, everything's ingrained and we can, you know, file back to exact moments in the show, but...
I think Arthur wasn't with them because, didn't he go with, maybe he was, because Charming and Killian had gone to save Merida and, Lancelot out of jail. Arthur had put them in jail.
Okay. All right. So that we have that much. So,
and then Lancelot disappears and we don't see him for the rest of the episode.
Whatever happened to Lancelot? Like, come on. All these people have, severe problems with just getting lost and going mm-hmm. or not telling people where they're going, which leads me to Mal. Yes, I'm going to bring it up 9 minutes into the podcast. We're not going to wait. I'm just... flabbergasted. Like, why can't the writers acknowledge that she is, one, a prominent character, a major player, and two, her daughter is now, the way they wrote her in the last season, is a major influencing character.
Mm-hmm.
You can't let that season end and just let it die, you know?
In season four, the apprentice says that the girl, or I think it was the sorcerer, which we now know as Merlin, says that the girls' fates are forever intertwined. So you can't have Emma, just show Emma, and you don't show Lily too. And then in the season 4 finale, Lily says she's going to go search for her father and asks if that's okay with Emma, and she says yes. So where the heck is she now?
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like they gave an indication that they were going to go off alone on their side Mm-mm. mission, her, Mal, and, you know, Lily. It seemed like this would be another storyline that the show would go to and switch into, and the fact that they haven't even mentioned their names, exactly. It just seems like they've made no attempt to acknowledge this, which is really weird.
And I don't know if they're trying to just be secretive and keep it as some, you know, wonderful surprise, but we know some of the characters that are going to be in the 100th episode, and Kristen Bauer and Agnes Bruckner were not mentioned so far mm-hmm. as having been cast in that episode. And I know Agnes Bruckner is now pregnant and she did another show, but I mean, her and Mal could still make a return, at least, you know, in season 5A and in 5B. I don't want to have to wait until the end of season 5 to see them come back.
Yeah, I don't know. If they're trying to surprise us, this is a horrible surprise, because mm-hmm. it's something that you have to build. You have to build up to, exactly. you know. And so, what are some of the other things?
I'd like to know where Merlin is now, mm-hmm. Currently, because we see towards the end of last episode that Henry is finally able to make contact with Merlin. And it's, you know, what Regina terms a voicemail message. Mm-hmm. So
hilarious.
Right. I want to know where he is now. Was he swept up in the curse, and is Emma hiding him somewhere? And we just haven't had an indication of that yet. Or is he still back in Camelot? Or, you know, what on earth happened to him? Because right before the message ends, he says that the Dark One's coming after him. And I want to know, did he mean Nimue, which, you know, I believe is the original Dark One, or did he mean Emma?
I have a little theory.
Okay.
I think that Merlin is using Emma to get to Nimue, mm-hmm. to locate or free whatever Nimue. And, maybe Nimue doesn't want to be free or something, and he's like doing this on the low because she's so damn dark. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm just throwing things out there, because at this point, who knows what's going on.
Also, we saw, like, I think it was episode 2, where it looked like Hades or someone from the underworld was coming over, and we know that they're going to Hades, or the character of Hades might be coming in 5B, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering if maybe Nimue is going to come from the underworld, maybe? Who knows? Or if he needs...
That's a good point. Since you mentioned Hades, let's talk about that episode. Let's speculate as to what might occur, what we might expect in terms of characters and storylines. I, like you, I'm looking forward to Hades and all the characters from Hercules.
I think that's going to take place in the 100th episode, because from what I've read about some of the characters that are coming back, like Korra and Peter Pan, the child version. I think when they go to the underworld, that's where they're going to see some of these characters. We also know that the Sydney Glass, or the mirror, is going to be coming back for that episode too. But he's still alive, so.
Yeah. Well, he was in the asylum last time we saw him.
He was, and then Regina broke him out and had her help him. And then the Snow Queen set him free. So, you know, presumably he's still in Storybrooke somewhere.
Okay. I want to know, first of all, I want to know if Neil is down there.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to know, like, what are these characters going to be doing in the underworld? You know, because it's like, in all the mythological stories, like the that I've enjoyed, the underworld isn't necessarily a hellish place.
No,
it's just where the souls dwell after their physical lives end. So
in Hades, there's three main sections: Tartarus, which is where all of the evil people go. And then there's the fields of Asphodel, where people who are neither good nor bad, they're kind of equal sections of both, and they go there, and it's kind of like purgatory. And then there's the Elysian fields, where the heroes are. So, I mean, we could see Korra in the fields of Asphodel, because she did have some good in her, but I think she might be more in Tartarus.
I mean, as a kid, yeah, she was okay. Maybe a wee baby, like, for a couple of weeks. But I see her in Tartarus. And then, but wasn't Tartarus where, okay, is that where Zeus built or cast the...
The Titans? Yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah, definitely there. Yeah, far, far away from everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil, where do you think he'll end up?
I think he would be in the Elysian Fields because he died saving everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Or at least I hope that's where he's at.
I still want to know, like, what are their activities? Like, yeah, it's a great place to be if you're in the Elysian Fields, like Elysium or whatever. But, what do you do all day? Are you just surrounded by nature and bliss? Do you play bridge? I mean, are you thinking about the ones that you loved and that are still alive? Or are you watching over them? Like, so that's going to be maybe the reason why all these characters are missing and just kind of randomly vanish is because the writers are so focused on this 100th episode.
Exactly. That they're, you know, missing out on all these other characters that should be, you know, continuously in Storybrooke.
Yeah, and also, but they're letting, you know, simple things slip. I don't
exactly.
know.
Exactly.
I don't know, but it's just me being nitpicky. What other things kind of stick out to you?
Let's see. I still want to know, I think I mentioned it a few... like maybe for a second, what caused Emma to come up, you know, to go after Merlin, if that was the case, if she, you know, in that voicemail, if she's the Dark One, and still, what caused her to change so drastically? Because even in last week's episode, she still seemed, you know, sane, and she was still, you know, trying to save herself. So what changed between that time and when she cast the curse to bring everybody back? What was it that put her over the edge?
In looking at the trailers, I mean, historically, these clips have been really misleading. But if you just go shot by shot, it's just... I'm curious if Merlin has been talking her into maybe... all the things she could do while being their Dark One. That's the only reason I thought that maybe he's using her to free or find Nimue. You know,
I think that's a big possibility. I also wonder too whether Nimue is trying to somehow maybe she's another force that is trying to sway Emma, you know, that we just haven't seen. Because I know Rumpel, when he was talking in the first episode, he said, you know, he could be any of the Dark Ones. You know, that was just the one that I think she felt most comfortable with seeing.
Or, yeah, I don't know about comfortable, but I know where you're going with that. Yeah.
You know, the most recognized or whatever of the Dark Ones. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, it's actually Nimue who is in her head and is actually trying to get her to do these horrific things.
So it could be, and it makes sense that holds up because Nimue was if she in fact was the original Dark One, then she could be the one using Rumpel's appearance, recognizability to really speak to Emma and really get to her and sway her.
We've seen Cora change form multiple times and pretend to be somebody else. So it's highly probable that Nimue is trying to sway Emma and make her, you know, go darker. And I would like to know what caused Nimue to become a Dark One. Because we heard last season the apprentice say that Merlin was the only one to ever fight the darkness and win. So when he was fighting the darkness, did the darkness, when it was seeking out, did it go into Nimue like it was trying to chase after Regina form?
Was it something that was tethered to something? Was it something like we mentioned in the last episode, was it something abstract or something easily or feasibly defeatable? I also want to know why Arthur avoided talking to Merlin. Why did he burn the toadstool?
Yeah, he put it in the fire instead of in the potion.
What's his deal? Is he that bitter, or is he? Is there something? Does he know something? Is there some sort of awareness that he's holding back from everyone?
Or does he remember something that happened in Camelot that nobody else remembers, and that's why he's still, you know, on this specific agenda? Because it just seems to me like so far from the time he's been in Camelot or in Storybrooke that it's kind of just been like an extension of everything he was doing in Camelot.
Yeah, I still feel like he wants to get his hands on the dagger himself. I don't know how he could possibly do that, but right now I'm just gonna be safe and say he's bitter and just doesn't want to help anyone because he's just like, well, if I can't be king and if I you know, can't be the whatever, then I can't, no one else can have their happy endings.
Or does he also know something about Merlin and Nimue that he's not saying? And again, what are these false prophecies that he accused Merlin of in the week before?
That leads me to question how many prophecies were made. Was it just the sort? Was it just Excalibur, or was there more? And what made them false? I mean, the whole caveat with Rumpel and seeing and learning that his undoing would be a boy, and he continually got the, like, he assumed incorrectly for a long time. You could be given a vision, and your interpretation of that vision could be wrong, right?
Exactly.
So just because you got it wrong doesn't make the prophecy false.
Exactly. There could be multiple versions or multiple paths of a certain prophecy, and, you know, it could come in just about any form.
Yeah.
You can't just go by what you've heard or what you've seen.
And you can't take anything for granted or take it for face value, you know? So, I'm curious to see what's going on with Mal. I feel like this episode, like all the others, leads to more questions
and fewer answers.
But I feel like it's still entertaining and we're still having fun.
I mean, we're getting like a couple answers here and there as we progress, but we still have a slew of questions that need answering.
Absolutely. And on that note, we'll see you next, or, well, we won't see you, but we'll be on air next week. Be sure to listen, rate, and subscribe. I'm your host, Thomas, joined by my fabulous co-host,
Christina.
And you've been listening to Once Upon a Time, the unofficial guide.